Hello everyone, you're listening to Confess Radio, brought to you by Confess Global Community Film Festival.
Hello everyone, this is Norman Hart for Confess Radio. Today we have with us renowned Toronto historian, tour guide and publisher, Bruce Bell. Hello Bruce, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Good morning.
Good morning. So Bruce, I understand you originally were from Sudbury. Is that so?
Yes, Sudbury, Ontario, born and raised. My father was a miner for Inco for almost 40 years, and I went to school there. And then I moved to Toronto when I was 17 to pursue a career in the theater.
Oh, my gosh. So how important was your theatrical past in influencing you?
Well, in those early days, I was, mostly an extra in movies, where I met your mom and dad, actually, all those years ago.
Wow.
Back in the 70s. And then I got into stand-up comedy with Yuck Yucks. And it was with Yuck Yucks, I think I developed a much more, interesting approach to working with people one-on-one. And I think that had such a profound impact on what I do today. I'm very comfortable in front of crowds and audiences, and I think it had a great impact on what I do today.
So what did your past have, did it influence you with your being the historian and tour guide that you are today?
I think I always loved history. My parents were big history buffs. I always loved history. I just never thought I could make a living at it. I never went to school for it. And even when I was in the 70s and 80s, when I was doing stand-up comedy and, walk-ons and movies and what little, theater plays I was involved in, there was always that love of history. I was always very interested in Toronto, always. It was always a hobby, so to speak. I always wanted to know what the city looked like before I arrived.
So what was first, the tour guide or being the historian?
When I moved into PAL, into Performing Arts Lodge in 1993, I started writing for the PAL newspaper. I was looking for something to do, and they asked me if I would, write something. And I said, you know what? I will. So I wrote a story on the history of St. James Cathedral, which we can see from our roof garden. And so learning about St. James Cathedral, I went, maybe I'll learn about another building. So I wrote for the PAL newspaper for a few years, picking a little building, a site in our neighborhood, St. Lawrence Market, the King Edward Hotel, and learning about the history and writing a story. And that, the publishers of the Bulletin, the downtown newspaper, they approached me in 1999 saying, would you like to write for us? And that's how it all began. And then 2002, St. Lawrence Market said, we really enjoy your stories. How would you like to start up a walking tour company, taking people through St. Lawrence Market? And that was in 2002 I started doing my tours.
And you're still doing those?
Still, to this very day.
Well, you're considered a premier tour guide of Toronto.
Well, I know I was one of the first. And when I started, there were maybe three of us doing it full time. And now there's got to be 30, 40 tour guides just in this area alone, just in Old Town.
Well, I believe, though, it's because Toronto is still becoming one of the major tourist attractions.
Oh, and I've seen that firsthand, how this has grown. Yeah. And anyone who lives in the St. Lawrence Market area can see that, too, how many tour buses every year more and more and more people are coming to the city.
Yeah.
It is, people from Europe. I get most of my tours that I do now are still Americans are still number one, then English, French, and Germans. Many Germans are picking this as a premier destination.
Do you get many Oriental people?
Well, lots of, we're now getting, China is a huge market. Last year, we had 250,000 Chinese visit Toronto, and they're saying it's going to be 1 million this year. I've done tours for the Chinese market. I don't speak Chinese. Some do bring interpreters with them, and some do speak English, but for the most part, they hire someone who can speak Chinese.
Mm-hmm. So going back to your Bulletin days, you were with them for quite a while.
18 years I wrote for that paper.
18 years.
I know. Wow. It was a wonderful run. And it was a column every month for 18 years.
Yeah, I recall.
200 columns.
Yeah, and some of them were pages long. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful pictures. So really, Torontonians are missing out then by not having this kind of information given to them.
I know. It's, you know, the newspaper and publishing is not what even was when I started out at all. People are struggling. And it's even hard to get books published. I mean, I managed to get two books published. But I know if I would have done this in the 70s, you know, I'm sure that would have been 10 books by now. But it's just not what it used to be at all. Mm. At all. So, you know, you've got to go online. Mm. And that's where I'm doing a lot of my writing now, or on websites that are online.
Your own websites or other people?
Other people. Toronto Stories is one that I write for.
Mm-hmm.
And but I do miss the newspaper. And many people still stop me in the local metro store going, you know, when's the bulletin coming back? Because I know a lot of the people who read my paper column, you know, are an older group of people who really prefer to hold a newspaper. And that I understand.
Yeah. A lot of them just aren't on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Yeah. Or they're on the internet and they're not involved with it.
No.
That heavily.
Just to do their emails, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing I've noticed as I walk around downtown, especially, is a lot of bronze markers outside Toronto landmarks with your name on it. So tell me a little bit about your historical plaque program.
Well, the Toronto Heritage Board did have a plaque program back in the 80s, and they stopped it. So when I got into touring, I would go to many places, and I'd say, this is where, you know, the Great Fire of Toronto happened, or this is where the people were hanged during the rebellion of 1837. And there was no plaque, and there was no one you could really phone to say, could we put a plaque up? So I started putting them up myself. I would raise the money and put up these beautiful bronze markers. And for a good 2 years, I put up about 100 plaques in downtown Toronto. Not all are beautiful bronze outdoor ones. Some are indoor ones and display picture displays that I did. Now Heritage Toronto has a great plaque program that I fully support. But back in 2003, 2004, I started putting up plaques.
Are they cataloged at all? Can you?
Yeah, I think I've cataloged them on my website. All my plaques are on my website, brucebelltours.ca, in the menu, historical plaques. And there's most of them are still there, and I'm very happy for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there are places now that you can walk by, and if there wasn't a plaque there, you wouldn't know that was
no,
a plaque.
No, absolutely. And we are getting better at it here in the downtown core between Ontario Heritage and Toronto Heritage and people like myself to really mark, you know, there are some buildings that put 10 plaques on. It's so historic.
Really?
You know, so.
I noticed so that there's not a plaque yet on the construction of the North Market where they're going to be putting up. I'm not sure what they're going to be putting up now. It's been so long. A courthouse with an actual market in there.
Sure.
We don't know.
No, and St. Lawrence Market itself does not have a plaque.
No.
It doesn't have a historic plaque, which is shocks me every time I walk by, every time I go in there.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll be part. If the new North Market, you know, gets built in the next couple of years, that'll all come together.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see that when it does happen. So another part of your life is your traveling. I know that you do a lot of traveling. In fact, you've just recently come back from Europe. What do you see a big difference when you come back to Toronto to where you've been?
Oh, I'm very grateful when I do come home, no matter where I go, of just how beautiful and well-run this city is. And that's something I never really thought about until I saw, you know, some cities in the world, just how bad some places are. But also, too, the good, like going to London, England, and seeing now they're starting to close off streets, which is we need to do that here, too. Yeah. Close off streets to traffic.
Yeah.
There's too much traffic in the downtown core. More walking should be done, more just people getting out away from cars. So many cars use downtown Toronto as a parking lot or a way to get from one end of the city to the other. So I've noticed that when I do go to Europe, just how many cities there are starting to look after pedestrians and and people who want to be outside.
They're trying, I believe, with the King Street.
Mm-hmm.
They've stopped a lot of cars from going along there, but there's a lot of complaints, of course.
No, for sure, and that was done not so much for pedestrians, but for streetcars.
Mm.
You know, I'm a fan of it because I'm on the streets all the time, and it's much easier to cross King Street now without worrying about traffic.
Mm.
But it's the little side streets that more cafes and more people rather than just cars parked there for no reason. We need more of that.
And I noticed also, as I was reading through your bio, that you were the honorary historian for the Hockey Hall of Fame. That's an interesting
title. You know, it's the honorary historian for the Hockey Hall of Fame building. It was Frank Selke Jr., who was on the board of the Hockey Hall of Fame, and his father has a cup named after him, the Frank Selke Cup, which is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. A real long, old NHL family, and it was... And Frank Selke, who's now passed on, when he was the head of the Hockey Hall of Fame, he liked all my articles. He loved history himself. And he said, you know, we'd like to do something for you. And I said, well, I love your building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why don't you just give me that title? And he did. And he gave me a little ceremony in the Hockey Hall of Fame and had my picture taken with some of the hockey players.
Wonderful.
And it's really of the building. And I don't get free passes in there or anything.
No.
It was more of a picture opportunity and for them to say, because they did a beautiful job in renovating that lovely old Bank of Montreal, built in, you know, in the 1880s.
Mm.
And we're so lucky to have that here in the old town.
Yeah, they kept it. They did a lot of construction all around it.
Stunning.
And even
if you don't like hockey, just to go into that building and see how spectacular that old banking hall is.
Mm.
Stunning.
Notice they bestowed upon you the title of the 51 Division Heritage Building.
Yes,
too.
Which again, at that time, the police chief there read all my articles in the bulletin and said, you know, well, it's something community oriented, you know, we should do something.
Yeah.
And so I said again, make me the honorary historian of the building. Just give me the title. I mean, no money is passed or anything. Just give me the title. And it's a good way of getting people, you know, to talk about heritage, these wonderful buildings that we've got left standing.
Mm.
You know, I bring tours in there all the time. I always make sure I bring groups inside that beautiful heritage building. It's an old part of the old gas works of the city. There used to be almost 60 of those type of buildings in that neighborhood at front.
Mm-hmm.
And where is it? Parliament. And now there's 5 of them left. And luckily, they're all preserved.
Mm.
Beautiful buildings.
So let's see, in the St. Lawrence Market area itself, you've written 2 books. Have you mentioned about the St. Lawrence Market in either of the books?
Oh, yeah. One book is just, I would say, the first book I wrote, it's called Amazing Tales of St. Lawrence Neighborhood. And I think I mentioned the market in every chapter in that book. St. Lawrence Market is the reason for this neighborhood. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, when Britain arrived here on our shores in 1793, you know, the reason that they chose this area to be the market is that people, the First Nations were here. There were people here fishing on this very spot where we are right now. They believe that maybe for about 800 years before the arrival of the Europeans, there were people fishing on the corner of Front and Jarvis, where St. Lawrence Market is. And that's why they chose it.
Really?
So rumor has it.
So is the future of the St. Lawrence Market, is there anything that's going on that we don't know about? Or?
Well, we're hoping for the new North Market, of course, to be built. And that will really change. Because, you know, we need the poor farmers are, you know, languishing in that tent.
They are.
On the Esplanade. And that should go. And that new market should have been finished. But, of course, as you know, they found all that archaeological artifacts. They had no idea as what would be there, and they kept digging up and digging up. That really, they were doing a First Nations dig there,
mm-hmm.
also. So, but I from what I've heard, the dig is done. They're saving what they can, and work should start as soon as spring gets here.
So you've not seen any of the artifacts yet?
Oh, yeah. They had them all on display.
They have?
At the Market Gallery after they found everything. You know, really bits and pieces of pottery and, of course, the old sewer pipe that they found dating back to the 1830s. And it was really, I was following that quite extensively, just what they were finding. It was amazing. Mm. I wish they could keep it, you know, and put a big tent over it and make it like the Roman Forum. But we need that market.
I heard they were going to put glass over it so that you could at least...
That was a plan, and that would have been a great plan, but I think it was way too expensive.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
It's the last open space left in the downtown core is that archaeological dig that's going on at Front and Jarvis.
Mm. Yeah, they certainly putting up buildings like left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. It's swallowing up Old Town Toronto.
It is, and what is old must be preserved, and it's so far so good, you know, that they haven't really torn down much in the last 25 years here in Old Town Toronto. That they're just fixing up what's left standing, but there isn't much. I mean, 25,000 buildings were torn down in Toronto between 1955 and 1975. 25,000. And Old Town was where we are. Thousands of buildings were completely destroyed in the 1970s without any thought.
And left empty. Left vacant land.
Just vacant land and parking lots. And then, of course, the new city council and mayors like David Crombie and John Sewell in the 1970s, they started to say, what have we done? Why did we allow this to happen? St. Lawrence Market was slated for demolition, and St. Lawrence Hall, all of that was slated to come down. This whole area was to be where we are at Front and Jarvis, was to be the CBC Broadcasting Center.
Oh.
No market, no housing, just all a whole new broadcasting center. And thankfully, they never built it.
No.
It was a flip of a coin.
Wow. What about the new area that's a little bit east, the Portland area? Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Oh, very much. You know, the whole, we're so lucky to have Gooderham and Wartz, the distillery district. That's a wonderful addition to our city. But at the same time, the problem is now it's going to be completely surrounded by a whole new city is being built around that. But we still have it, you know, with the cobblestone streets and the lovely cafes and the whole Portlands area. I mean, in another 25 years, this city will be completely unrecognizable. It will not be the city that we know now. And when you look at these plans of what is being built, you know, you live in a big city, you want it to grow, of course, but you want thought to be put into it. You need public space. And I really hope they get the rail deck park approved and done at the base of the CN Tower, that 9-acre park to cover the rail tracks. We need more green space. I mean, when you think Toronto never had a public area until 1964, when they built Nathan Phillips Square, that was our first public, square. We never had that before. We had a few little parks, of course, High Park, but if you live downtown, that's a long way to go. Allen Gardens, that was about it. And everything came after that. There was no public areas in the downtown core at all.
No, I've been reading about them wanting to put a park over the railway lines. I don't know how that's going to work, but it's certainly something worth thinking about, I suppose.
Well, they did it in Chicago.
They have.
Beautiful. Their Millennium Park is absolutely stunning, and it's this park built over the railway land. And that's what we need to do here. That needs to be covered up. Hopefully. But again, where is the money? I can speak like this because I have no money. I don't know where it's coming from, you know. But that would be a nice thing to see.
Oh, I'm sure, though, if there's something that's needed that badly, the money would appear somehow. For sure.
Sure.
So what have you got in line for the future, Bruce?
Well, I hope to just keep doing walking tours until I can't any longer. And I'm pretty much, you know, I've taken a lot of bookings up until next year. So, like, if I can do 3 or 4 walking tours a week, I'm very happy. Up and until, you know, another 20 years, I'd be really happy. I want to keep traveling as much as I can and do more radio interviews and just keep as busy as one can.
Do you have a list of the walking tours that you do?
Well, most of my tours are, I ask people to contact me, and then we talk and make it very, very one-on-one. What would you like to see? But most people want a St. Lawrence Market, Old Town Toronto tour. So that's mostly what I do. But I do other areas of the city, but 90% of my tours are in my neighborhood, which are wonderful. I'm so glad it's become this major tourist attraction, not just, you know, for tourists, but people who live in Toronto also.
Mm-hmm.
I want to learn more about our city.
And they can contact you?
On my website,
yeah.
brucebelltours.ca. Mm-hmm. My phone number's there, my email is there, and they can contact me, and off we go.
That's wonderful. So tell me, Bruce, is there another book in the works?
Well, there's always... It's, yeah, sure. There's always some. I've got so much, all those columns, you know, could be put into a wonderful book. So
that's true.
I'm always looking.
That's true. They're going to waste right now.
I know. So I want to get them into a book.
Yeah.
You bet.
So what else, Bruce, would you like to tell? You got any particular stories that listeners might be interested in?
The weather.
Oh, my God.
You know, and I think that, too. I think, you know, whatever weather that we are in now, you know, most of us have air conditioning and, of course, central heating. But when you think of people who lived here, you know, in a Victorian Toronto in the 1850s, you know, 150,000 people, that the weather, what was outside, was as bad as it was inside. And I often think what it must have been like for all those people who couldn't afford coal. They had fireplaces and there wasn't that much coal going around or wood, of just what how hard life was. And I'm not even talking colonial times where people who lived, you know, just the vast majority of a huge Victorian city having to deal with weather. And it's the same, basically the same weather we've got today. And how did they plow the streets? I mean, they couldn't. So every time the weather gets to be like we are right now, which is an ice storm, I often think, what would it be like, you know, to live here 150 years ago.
Yeah, that's for sure. And no cars,
everything was horse-drawn. The smell would have been atrocious. Oh. There would have been this vast stink that just permeated every city constantly, whether it be good or bad smells. It would have just been the smell of slaughterhouses, the smell of 500,000 horses on the street, the smell of a market. It was just there from... 24 hours a day, there would have been a big smell in the city.
Wow. So,
which we don't have anymore.
No, yeah. Not at all. Not at all. But it would certainly be interesting to know what would be here in say, 100 years' time.
Well, sure. No, absolutely. And I love when I speak to some of the people who live in our building who are, you know, in their late 90s and early 100s, who remember Toronto in the 1920s and the 1930s.
Mm.
And I do ask them, I say, I mean, what, you know, what are the biggest differences? Of course, we take so much for granted today. But even in the 1920s in Toronto, which were boom times, you know, things were still harsh.
Mm.
You know, especially if you were out of work, there was no public safety nets. I mean, it was a very... very hard existence for a lot of people. But the city in the 1920s was always my favorite era when I read about it, of what Toronto, it's really the city we know today, was built in the 1920s, started to be laid out then.
Mm.
They should have built the subway back then too. And there was talk, but they never did.
The subway being the trains or?
The subway underneath that. They should have built a Queen Street subway back in the 1920s. There was talk of that. There were all these great plans for the city that had to be shut down when the Depression came in the 1930s. And just a lot of these great plans of the city had to be put aside. And there was a whole network of underground tube system was to be built that unfortunately never was. And they should have done that as far back as 1900.
But they do have a network of walkways underground, which I...
You mean the path system?
Oh,
it's fabulous. That path system is so good when you're doing tours and the weather's really horrible and you don't want to cancel a tour and say, we're going to do the tour of the path. And I always meet people and I show them the path and it comes up, as you know, onto streets, into buildings.
Yeah.
It's a great way of getting around the city. Big fan of the path system.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I am too. So tell me, Bruce, what's going to happen? Where are you going to be in 5 years' time?
Well, I'm hoping to still be living here in this wonderful building that we're in and still doing tours. I mean, my five-year plans before are always quite ambitious. If I can just remain where I am right now, I would be the happiest man alive.
Yeah.
I just couldn't ask for anything more. And I'm quite happy. Love doing what I do.
Do you have any plans for a trip?
I mean, I love to go to New York. I'm going next month in May. I always love to go to New York.
And you're taking people with you?
Well, once our money gets better, when the dollar's at par, take 20 people to New York or Chicago. I did a lot of tours in New York with people, and the money was good, but it's just too expensive to bring 20 people down to New York City. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, again, I love doing that. I love showing people that. New York, and I love showing people the similarities between these great North American cities, of how we really have the shared heritage, Chicago and Washington and Philadelphia and Toronto, mm-hmm. that, you know, of course, predate the coming of the Europeans, and how we started out and how the railway joined us all together.
Yeah, you must have great knowledge of the history of these places.
Oh, it's especially New York and Toronto, eh?
Yeah.
Great connection, and I love when people from New York come up to Toronto and I get to show them around.
Well, Bruce, it's been lovely talking with you.
As with you too.
And hopefully you'll come back and talk to us again in a while and let us know what you've been up to. And in the meantime, you keep well, and I hope that people that are listening will go to your website and see what you can do for them. I'm sure that if they would, then they'll be very happy by perhaps taking a tour with you. And I, for one, I'm going to sign
up. Anytime.
And as I say, thank you very much once
again. Thank you, Norman. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And this is Norman Hart signing off for Confest Radio.